WDYM 93.1 FM. Happy to be with you. We forget to do the disclaimer, Nateel?
Yeah, I almost forgot.
Yeah.
It's okay, I got it in. We're fine.
We don't want me saying some of the stuff I'm going to say without that disclaimer firmly in place.
You got some stuff to say today?
I've always got something to say. 701-293-9000. Join the program, 888-970-9329. Email talk at WDAY.com. We got a fun show today. Coming up at 1 o'clock tomorrow at NDSU, the Students for Sensible Drug Policy. That is the NDSU chapter of what's a national group. They're going to be having a discussion about marijuana, legalizing marijuana. They're going to be speaking to a number of people, including the folks behind the ballot measure to legalize recreational marijuana in North Dakota. They're also going to have some lawmakers on there. Gretchen Dobrovich, who's a Fargo area Democrat. Tom Kading, who's a Fargo area Republican. Two of the members of the group are going to be on the program with us today to preview that event and talk about the discussion they're going to have. That's at 1 o'clock. Also at 1:30, it's tax day.
Yeah.
Did you get yours filed?
I filed mine in January.
In January?
God, yeah.
How did you do it in January?
As soon as my sheets all showed up, I was done.
Yeah.
And I only had two forms this year. My student loan form and my singular W-2.
It's pretty easy for you then.
Yeah.
I did mine a week ago.
Why do you wait so long? Why do people wait so long?
I don't know. I don't know what's wrong with me. I resent having to do it. I just hate it. I mean, the whole process.
You're not the only one that waits this long, though. And tons of people wait for forever. And then you get to the point and you just start panicking because, like, today everything is jammed up and there's no bandwidth for anybody. And
I think for a lot of people, it's fear of the unknown. It's such a complicated process. And I think a lot of people are scared that they're going to do it and they're going to end up, like, having to pay in. I had to pay in this year. I did not do my withholding correctly. Normally I try to balance it where I get right down to where I'm just breaking even, right? That's what I would prefer, is I would like to keep the maximum amount of money coming to me in my paycheck, without having to pay anything back. I don't want the government. Some people do it so they get a big refund, which I don't understand. I don't want the government to hold my money interest free for me. I would rather have my money. So I try to balance it, but no, this year I had to pay in $600. That stunk.
I tend to have my withholdings a little bit higher than is strictly recommended because I don't want to end up in a situation where I need to pay in at the end of the year. Because having like a surprise $600 bill is a little strenuous for my financial situation right now.
Yeah, I had to cut a check. But it, you know, I tried to. I guess I didn't hit the mark. Anyway, we're going to have Kent Busick on. He is with Busick Olson Associates. Also, probably better known, I would argue, to Teal, as a guest host for the Rob Report on 970 WDAY. This is how his friends and family know him. The tax thing's just a side gig.
I see.
Not really. Kent's going to be on with us at 1:30 to talk about your last-minute questions, maybe talk about some advice on how to set yourself up. If you didn't like your outcome this year, how to maybe set yourself up a little bit better for last year. And also maybe discuss about how, you know, obviously the political angle, you know, what's the practical reality of how the tax reform hit tax filers this year. I mean, was it harder? Was it easier? Did a lot of people see benefits? We'll talk with Kent about that coming up at 1:30, plus your phone calls, of course. 701-293-9000, 888-970-9329, email talk at WDAY.com. All right, let's see. What are we going to talk about here first? Yesterday we talked about Governor Burgum. He's obviously under scrutiny because of the state auditor is taking a look at his travel. We had the Super Bowl fiasco, which are you kind of, do you think Governor Burgum's wishing he'd never gone to the Super Bowl?
Oh, probably. And I don't think there's a whole lot of people in the world that actually wish that.
Yeah.
I wish I'd never gone to that amazing football game.
Yeah. I think Governor Burgum's wishing he'd skipped it. He accepted XL Energy's offer to pay his way. It was about a $40,000 trip. He ended up paying the whole thing back, I should add. But now, not only did he get a bunch of negative headlines about that, as he should have, that was worthy of criticism, but now the state auditor is looking into his travel. And I can report today that a lawmaker through legislative counsel, and I can't name the lawmaker because I don't know who it is. Legislative counsel is essentially the legal counsel for the legislature, and so they don't divulge that. But a lawmaker in the legislature has been requesting information about all these different events Burgum has been holding. And there's been a lot of them, Nateel. I don't know if you've noticed this. I've noticed this. And I've actually heard some people in political circles joke that we elected Burgum the event planner in chief. But we've had a number of these. We've had Burgum's Recovery Reinvented, his Main Street Summit, the Day of Recovery. We had the off-year State of the State Address. Now, normally, the State of the State Address that's delivered at the beginning of the legislative session, that's required by law. The State of the State Address that Burgum delivered in Minot was sponsored by the Chamber of Commerce. Now, what a lawmaker's doing is they're going through and they want a survey of state agencies saying, how many employees did you send to these events? Saying, you know, what was the cost in terms of meals and travel sending to these events? I think, and I guess I don't want to speak for the motivations of this lawmaker, whoever it is that's requesting it. They're obviously looking at what the cost of all these events are. And I'm also wondering, too, like Governor Burgum has been holding all of these events in our region. We've been talking about, you know, and it's not just that these were the events that were requested in the email, but there's been more, right? I mean, we had like the education summit. We've had a lot of stuff where it just kind of seems like Governor Burgum's convening a lot of panels and committees and events or whatever and getting everybody together to sit around and talk about things. But this is a guy that campaigned on transforming government, right? Like he called, you know, the Recovery Reinvented. That was the name of one of his events. And then he created the Office of Recovery Reinvented, which is headed up by the First Lady, Governor Burgum's wife. I guess I'm just looking at all this, and I'm wondering, this is reinventing government? Because I got to tell you, Neil, that forming a bunch of committees to sit around and talk about stuff is not exactly an innovation when it comes to governance. I mean, that's kind of what government is. We've already got, I think, closing in on like 200. There's a website, or at least there was. I don't know if it's still there, but during the Dalrymple administration, there was an actual website of state boards and commissions that was nearly 200 entries long. I mean, you want to talk about all the different boards and commissions and everything that we've created? We already had a ton of them. And now Burgum's adding to the list, and that's reinventing government? It seems like a little bit of a stretch to me. It seems, I don't know, and I'm still waiting. You know, yesterday we had columnist Mike Jacobs on. And, you know, that was one thing that both Mike and I were talking about, is waiting for more information about, for instance, what this Main Street initiative is, right? I mean, that was sort of one of the things that Governor Burgum talked about during his campaign the most. Well, we're about, you know, closing in on halfway through his first term in office. What is the Main Street initiative? Does anybody know? I mean, I understand it, I think, as a sort of like philosophy, as maybe a sort of vision, but in terms of actual policy, what is it? I don't know. You know, so I don't know what my question for the audience is. I mean, I think the point I'm trying to make is, what do you think Governor Burgum has achieved so far? And again, he's coming under some fire. We had the Super Bowl trip that got him a lot of negative headlines. He's under scrutiny by the state auditor. According to this email, and you can read more about it at sayanythingblog.com, he's coming under scrutiny of lawmakers. Do you think Governor Burgum's doing a good job? And what would you say his accomplishments are so far here at almost the midpoint of his term in office? 701-293-9000, 888-970-9329. Email talk at wday1.com. Love to hear from you. We'll be right back after this. Don't go away. Welcome back, Rob Port, 970 WDY, AM 93.1 FM. Talking about Governor Doug Burgum, and I don't know, it just seems like so far all he's doing is scheduling a lot of events. I'm trying to think of what Governor Burgum's done. I mean, he wrote in office, we're going to reinvent government. Reinvent government, Nateel. I mean, that's a bold thing. I mean, this is a guy from the tech sector. When you're talking about reinventing something, you're thinking of something disruptive like Napster or online streaming or something that just completely changes the way we do things, right? Well, what has Governor Burgum done in government so far to even put us on the path towards changing the way government works? Because I don't see it. Am I missing something, Nateel?
I don't think so. He's talked a lot about different philosophies and different ways of thinking about things when it comes to, for example, higher education,
yeah,
and whatnot. But I haven't seen any motion policy-wise toward reaching any of those philosophies in a concrete way.
Yeah. Now, you're right. I have liked, and I have praised Governor Burgum for the way he's spoken about some of these issues, right? He has spoken about higher education as one example, about the need to rethink how we're delivering education. We have the status quo is based on a very antiquated model.
And Governor Burgum talks a lot about a more efficient transfer of knowledge.
Right. And I think that's great. But what in terms of, I mean, he created a new committee and appointed some people to it to discuss changing the way higher ed is governed, which, okay, but we've been having that debate for a long time in the state. And we've tried a number of different ways to govern the university system. And as much as I've been a critic for the way the university system has been governed, I kind of feel like that's a vein that's been mined out. I don't know what else is coming there. So I don't know. I mean, it's a lot of vision, but not a lot of follow through so far from Governor Burgum. And what really worries me is that we have in this state, we're going to be having a debate about ethics, right? We have a group, they are masquerading as a local group, but they're really part of this national effort called Represent Us. So far, according to their financial disclosures, that's where they've gotten all of their money, is this represent.us group, which I think is funny. They're an ethical group. They're whining about money and politics, but they're going to buy their way onto the North Dakota ballot with a bunch of paid petitioners to get their ethics commission created. I think their proposal is a terrible idea. I think it will reduce ethics in North Dakota. I think it'll make politics in North Dakota coarser. I think it'll make our government less transparent. I think it's wrong. I think it's a terrible idea. But that being said, their argument in favor of their measure, right? Because people are just going to perceive it as an effort intended to enhance ethics. That's how they're going to brand it. It's being helped by the fact that our governor took a trip to the Super Bowl paid for by XL Energy. They're going to be helped in their argument by that. Now, I think the governor's trip is an example of the status quo working. He has been suitably chastened by that through negative media coverage and the like. I'm not sure what an ethics commission would accomplish beyond that. But, you know, his situation, and who knows what this auditor report's going to reveal. We're going to learn more about that come June. My understanding is that report's going to be submitted to the Legislative Audit and Fiscal Review Committee in June. And we'll learn more about the Governor Burgum's use of travel in his office at that time. But, I mean, if there's further revelations to deal, that's really going to help that ballot measure, which I don't know how you feel about the ballot. I think it's a bad idea. I don't think that's a good thing.
I don't see a problem with the ballot measure itself. I know you don't necessarily like it, but I don't see an issue with increasing our accountability as a state when it comes to government and the ethical responsibility of our politicians.
Yeah. I don't know that it increases accountability, though. I think what it does is it creates a venue for partisan politics. But speaking of which, about government accountability, this was really interesting. I've been listening to this podcast recently. called In the Dark. Have you heard about this one? Because it's actually, it's kind of local. It's about the Jacob Wetterling case.
Oh.
It's been out for a while. It was actually produced. They're just coming up on season. I caught wind of it because their season two was about ready to start. But their first season, which started in 2016, was about the Jacob Wetterling case. Very, very good. And part of it, though, is about accountability in law enforcement. And they make a point about the fact that we elect county sheriffs. And so they're talking about Starnes County, and their argument is that Starnes County botched their job when it came to the Jacob Wetterling case, and Danny Heinrich didn't get arrested as soon as he should have been because of the botched investigation by Starnes County. But their argument is, and it runs counterintuitively, because I think most people would think if you make a position elected, that makes it more accountable. Right? That's sort of how the logic follows. The same, I think, with this ballot measure, this ethics ballot measure, the idea being, well, if we create an ethics commission, then politics will be more accountable. But I don't know necessarily that that's true. Because in the instance with the sheriffs, what you've done is you've created an elected position where now all of a sudden they're not accountable for the county sheriff's not really accountable to the county commission. Right? The only time the county sheriff's accountable is when his or her term's up. What is it, every 4 years? So every 4 years, they're accountable to voters. That sounds nice, but in between those 4 years, they're kind of not accountable to anybody. Other than, I guess, they could be recalled by voters, which is not necessarily a very easy process.
Nor is it very common. I mean, I can't think of a time in nearby counties, at least in my recent memory, where we've actually recalled a sheriff.
Yeah, well, we've had a lot of problems with sheriffs in North Dakota recently. Well, there was a deputy in Bismarck just this month facing charges for stealing meth from law enforcement. There was a sheriff up in Wells County who last year abruptly resigned. And then all of his deputies were fired. There was a point at which Wells County, North Dakota, had no sheriff's office at all. They lost everybody.
Yeah, but that's a resignation. I'm just trying to think of a time when voters have actively recalled.
Yeah. I don't know. But my point is we've had a lot of troubles with the sheriffs. Also, are voters necessarily qualified to evaluate a law enforcement professional? You know, I mean, is that a position we want? City police chiefs are elected. And so my point is that sometimes I think we look at these situations and we make assumptions that a certain way of doing things is going to promote accountability when it doesn't necessarily. Right. We have, for a lot of excellent reasons, North Dakotans love electing people. We elect a lot of people. We elect people on the statewide ballot. We probably shouldn't. People like the tax commissioner and the insurance commissioner. These people don't make policy. I don't know why we're electing them. Other than we have a fetish for elections. And I think Americans in general sort of have a fetish for democracy. Why wouldn't we? We're the birthplace of the modern form of democratic government. But that doesn't necessarily mean we should elect everybody. Just as making a position an elected position doesn't necessarily promote accountability for that position, I don't think that creating an ethics commission necessarily promotes ethics. We'll do the rundown. Coming up next is the Rob Report, 970 WDY AM, 93.1 FM. Don't go away.
The Rob Report. The Rob Report. On 970 WDAY. The Rundown.
All right, Nateel, what's out there?
Well, you heard Eric mention it. The IRS is having some difficulties now.
Anything, it's almost like a sort of microcosm for dysfunction in government. Like they can't even get this right. Like we're trying to give them money, and they can't hilarious. Even get this right.
It's hilarious. I cannot stop giggling. So their payment site has crashed just hours before the filing deadline. There are also some partial issues with actual filing if you're using any sort of Intuit service, which includes like TurboTax or H&R Block, is having some problems right now.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I've already filed, and they took my money out of my account already. So
you're doing okay.
It. Yeah. I wouldn't say I'm okay with it, but it's already happened. But yeah, I don't know. And by the way, I should add, we'll have Kent Busick on. He is a CPA. he does this stuff for a living. So I guess maybe if you have questions or if you're stuck on this, if you're having trouble paying your taxes today, Kent might have some advice on things you can do to make sure you're not breaking the law. I would think though it's going to result in some sort of leniency here if people can't get their taxes done.
Oh, it has to,
because
right?
The site crashed.
It's the IRS's fault, although that's never mattered at any other point in time ever.
Yeah. I mean there's something to be said here about, like, our government just can't do anything right. Well, I should say they can't do anything right. It's just, I don't know.
They sure can't do a whole lot of tech-based things right. The government needs to invest in strong QA systems.
Yeah. I mean, I remember, this isn't like anything new with the IRS. I remember years ago, there was a member of Congress, and I'm talking like a decade ago. It used to be a thing, and I don't know if they still operate them or not. The IRS used to have, like, call-in helplines.
Still do.
Okay, they still do. Okay, so... what this congressman did is he had members of his staff call in to various IRS helplines with the same question and have the IRS answer it. And these regional lines, and there, I think he called 7 or 8 of them, gave like 6 different answers. They called like 8 different lines and they got 6 different answers to the same tax question. So there's something else here. Is the government incompetent? Maybe. Also, is the policy that they're trying to administer so gobsmackingly confusing and Byzantine that it's just impossible to administer? Maybe that's part of it as well. I don't know. Let's see. We got a caller on the line. Todd, you're on. What's up?
I've got two questions or comments with regard to this computer system going down.
All right.
First of all, could it be Russian hacking, which is a legitimate concern?
Maybe. I don't know. That's speculation.
And secondly, I'm just wondering if that's the reason why President Trump has filed for an extension.
Did President Trump file for an extension?
Yes, that's been reported.
He's probably filed for an extension because his tax situation is fairly complicated, being a
large
business.
Lots of people file for extensions. I don't know that that means one thing or another. My dad files for an extension every year. I don't know what the big deal about that is. Thanks for the call, Todd. As for if it's Russian hacking, I don't know. I think more likely it's just there's a big rush of people. We're right at the deadline.
It's basically like the government at this day every year gets hit by a DOS attack, a DDoS. Because there's so many people trying to access the website right at a time, but they need the system to handle that because this happens.
I haven't seen it been reported anywhere that there was anything malicious going on, that there was an attack. I think it's just a crush of people trying to get their taxes filed.
Well, and the IRS hasn't made much of an official statement yet, and I'm sure they will once they have a better grasp of what's actually happening.
Maybe it is. I haven't heard any. It could. You can never rule it out, I guess. I haven't heard anything leading anybody to believe that it was an attack, so I think that's just speculation. I mean, I wouldn't, not to say that the Russians wouldn't try to do something like that or some other malicious actor, but I haven't heard anything to that. I think at this point it's just incompetence. There's a crush of people trying to file their taxes. The government wasn't ready for it. Let's see. Caller, Ken, you're on. What's up?
All right. I'm going to cut the government a little bit of slack and just say that I don't know that there's any realistic way that you could have that much bandwidth or even test for a crush of that kind of hits and pings on one day. So how about this? If your name is A through N, your day is Monday. If your last name ends in M through T, your day is Tuesday.
If
you're the last group, your day is Wednesday. Just spread it out.
Well, the thing is,
the government's going to get their money.
Or how about people spread out? I mean, we have months literally to get this done.
Says Mr. I filed my taxes last week.
So you know.
You'll notice that
till the last day, and then this is what you get. You got a gazillion people hitting a website, and there's really no way.
Well, there is a way.
Why do you even need bandwidth just for a single day?
There is actually a way that you could scale this, Ken. I've run a website for years, and one of the things about blogging is every once in a while you'll have a post that goes viral. Now, I didn't need to have the hosting capacity to handle that sort of traffic every day, but I needed to be able to handle it. And through services like, you know, distributed networks, I could handle it. And that was me operating a website on my own on a shoestring budget. This is the federal government. There's ways to do this. Also, Amazon has, like, Amazon, all these big Walmart, they have big spikes in traffic around the holidays, big shopping seasons, Black Friday. They never seem to go down. They seem to be able to handle it. Why can't the federal government handle it? So I get your point.
They're just not very good at it. So yeah, look at Obamacare when the exchanges went up. They're just not very good at it.
Do you think part of the problem is all the really smart computer people are working in the private sector?
Yes. And
who would you rather work for?
The screening and the testing that needs to happen with a Bezos cracking the whip is different than some committee or, you know, some group of people who, if they fail, nobody gets fired.
Who would you rather work for? I mean, really? I mean, if you're a cutting edge, really really good web developer, who would you rather work for? The federal government or like Amazon? I think I'd rather work for Amazon.
I think most people would, and that's where your talent pool is going to be.
Yeah.
And especially on a project, you know, this big that comes to a tip point, you know, today.
I think, thanks for the call, Ken. Nateel, I think with the federal government, we ought to make the federal government smaller. The federal government ought to do less stuff, and then maybe they'll be better at doing the stuff that they're supposed to be doing.
Yeah, no, they won't. I think we need to blast through these last three headlines.
All right. Fine.
Surprising no one, people with less political knowledge think that they know a lot about politics.
I don't think that this is restricted just to politics.
No, but this specific study was dealing with just political knowledge. It was a research study published in the Scientific Journal of Political Psychology.
There's a name for this. It's like a syndrome or something.
The Dunning-Kruger effect?
That's it. Yeah. I've read about this. And it is. I think the more ignorant you are, the more fearful you are of appearing ignorant.
Yes.
I think there's a relationship between those two things. I think that's why every once in a while you'll see on like the late night talk shows, they'll do like the man on the street interviews and ask them something that's obviously incorrect and people will pretend they know what they're talking about.
Yes.
I remember there was one years ago I was laughing about. It was supposed to be the first lady debate between Michelle Obama and Ann Romney. They were asking people, who do you think won the first lady debate? Well, obviously there was no first lady debate. The first ladies aren't on the office. The first ladies don't debate. But you had all these people weighing in. Oh, I thought Michelle Obama did great. Oh, I thought Ann Romney really did a good job. It didn't even happen. But they're pretending because they're afraid of looking stupid like they didn't watch the first lady debate. So yeah, this doesn't surprise. As somebody who's worked writing about politics for 15 years, I could tell you this is a thing.
You want to know what I really found interesting though?
What?
That the effect became even more apparent and even more intense when political partisanship was activated.
When they were
talking specifically to people and asking them to identify themselves as their party, the less that person knew about politics, the more they attempted to assert that they did.
Okay, so once you ask them to identify as Democrat or Republican or something like that?
Yeah, so more often than not, people that are particularly partisan will think of themselves as far more politically knowledgeable than someone not partisan or someone who doesn't see themselves as partisan.
Well, because they're posers. Right. I mean, they want to appear to be super involved. So, of course, you know, they're going to affiliate. And of course, you know, the tribalism of partisan politics is going to appeal to them. Of course. And, you know, the hard thing is, I mean, I was just arguing with some guy on Facebook who was he's arguing with me about governor. He said, well, Governor Burgum opposes what Trump's doing on trade. I was like, well, no, I literally just interviewed the guy on Friday. Here's the audio. Here's some quotes of him saying it. The guy's arguing with me. He just can't admit that he's wrong. It's remarkable. The moral of the story is it's okay to not know everything.
It's okay to ask questions.
It's okay to ask questions. It's okay not to know everything. It really is. All right, what's next?
I think everybody might feel a little better not knowing this next story. making me extremely grateful that I am driving across the country instead of flying. Woman partially sucked out of jet when window breaks mid-flight. Plan lands safely in Philadelphia.
This is a plot out of a movie.
No,
this is real.
Southwest Airlines landed a flight safely in Philadelphia today after the jet violently depressurized when a piece of its engine flew into and broke a window, according to passenger accounts and air traffic controllers. One passenger's father-in-law, who was relaying information from his daughter, said that the impact was so severe that a female passenger was partially sucked out of the plane when that window imploded. Now, she was not wearing her seatbelt in her seat the way you're supposed to. Had she have been wearing that seatbelt, she would not have been sucked out of the air, out of the airplane window. And thankfully, she was not sucked all the way out of the plane window.
Oh, this sounds like a nightmare.
Yeah. Welcome to I'm really glad that I'm driving to New York instead of flying.
I don't like fly. I know it's safe, and I don't mean to besmirch the reputation of our airlines.
And we've said many times that safe plane landings don't make news, and this is exactly.
I don't know. I mean, it's just the whole thing's unpleasant. The TSA treats you like cattle. The plane are basically like shipping containers. You're stuck in a metal tube with a bunch of other people's farts for 3 hours.
I don't mind that.
And then,
like, the actual act of flying, I think, is pretty cool.
Yeah. I don't know. It makes me nervous. I get so nervous. I get sweaty, and then I have to, like, take a shower the minute I'm off the airplane.
There's something pretty cool about being in a metal tube going nearly the speed of sound.
No, I don't think there's anything cool about that. I think what's really cool is being safe on the ground on your own 2 feet. That's the part I like.
I guess you're not coming with me to Mars.
No, definitely not.
We're going to wrap up with one quick story. Barbara Bush's end-of-life decision is stirring a debate over comfort care.
I wondered if this wouldn't draw some of that sort of attention. Because obviously end-of-life issues have been controversial, you know, for a long time. I don't know. I'm a big supporter of people going out how they want to go out.
I agree.
You know, she's made her choice. You know, she's obviously lived a very long and fulfilling life. You know, she's made her choice.
She's
about her
92.
Health.
I think she's lived a very full life.
Yeah. So, you know, she's going out on her own terms, and good for her. What a nice lady. Barbara Bush there's not a lot of figures in politics that are likable, I think. And maybe I'm cynical, but she always seemed like such a nice lady. Sorry to hear that she's on her way out, but nice to know she can go out on her own terms. Not everybody gets to make that choice.
And I'm sure that'll be a debate that continues for a very long time, because we as humans seem to think that we know what's best for people outside of our own experience and situation. Yeah.
It's interesting to hear you say that, because that's what I see in liberalism. I see that hubris. And just knowing the right way to pull the government's levers to make things right for everybody. That seems like hubris to me. We'll have to discuss that maybe another time. Let's wrap this up.
You're listening to AM 970 WDAY 93.1 FM. This is The Rob Report.
And that's The Rundown.
Welcome back, Rob Report, 970 WDAY, AM 93.1 FM. I did to just follow up on what I was saying there at the end of the segment I shouldn't say it's just liberals that have that hubris. I think there is hubris in politics in general, where we seem to think that a lot of times we could just, if we just design the right public policy, if we just put in place the right regulations, we could solve all of society's problems. And I think that's hubris. I think it's a mistake. I think Republicans make the mistake. I think Democrats make the mistake. Heck, I think libertarians make the mistake. Like, there's just some right way of doing it. Humanity is imperfect. You know, you're not going to stop some people from making selfish decisions, self-destructive decisions, abusive decisions towards other people. You're just not. Some people are just going to do that. And there's no way you can craft public policy in a way, which is why I think generally, you know, outside of some major policy areas, I'm a little skeptical of new laws. I'm a little skeptical of new regulation. I understand that sometimes we have to update our laws and our regulations to reflect modern society. But on the whole, you know, my default position to most new policy ideas is no. And that's and why? Because I just don't think that government is a computer that can be programmed to just get the right outputs that we want. I don't think society works that way. Does that make more sense? I think I sounded maybe more partisan than I intended.
What you said at the end of the last segment really felt like a jab at liberals and liberalism in general.
Okay.
I can very much accept what you are saying now in a much broader way.
Republicans are supposed to be the people who want to limit government, or at least.
Well, it sure hasn't been happening much lately, has it?
Once upon a time, that was the sort of thing Republicans. Well, once upon a time, that was something Republicans talked about. Maybe not so much anymore. I don't know. We need laws, and we need policy, and we need the process, and politics in a democratic society is the manner through which we establish those things. But I think sometimes we're always demanding new things. You know, when there's something happens, and then we all say, well, there ought to be a law, and then we pass a law, and usually very little changes. I mean, there's just not that many. There's just not that many points in time where we implemented a law and it had some sweeping effect and really made things better. That doesn't happen as often as people think. What happens, I think, far more often is we get unintended consequences. You know, case in point, we were talking about the Jacob Wetterling case at the beginning. I'm listening to this great podcast called In the Dark. You should check it out if you're into that sort of thing. It's about the Jacob Wetterling case. The Wetterling case was the beginning of the sex offender registries. And there was actually, I didn't know this, but Patty Wetterling, Nateel, when they were first talking about, they did not want the sex offender registries to necessarily be public. They wanted it to be like a law enforcement tool, not something made public. That was a last minute change based on another abduction that happened at the time, shortly before the law was going to a vote. They made, or was introduced or whatever. They made the change, and now the sex offender publics are registries are public. And I don't know that they've necessarily been the panacea I think that they were intended to be. I think in a lot of ways that's done more harm than good. But I don't know. We get a little arrogant sometimes about policies and a little myopic about how we think things are going to turn out. Hour two of the Rob Report coming up next. We're going to talk about policy changes. Legalizing medical marijuana. A couple members of the Students for Sensible Drug Policy from NDSU are going to be joining me. Coming up next here on the Rob Report, 970 WDY AM, 93.1 FM. Don't go away. Like a tiger, defying the laws of gravity. I'm a racing car. Welcome back, Hour 2, Rob Report, 970 WDYM, 93.1 FM. Happy to be with you. My guests in this hour, North Dakota's going to be having a debate. Well, we've been having a debate, really, about marijuana in the last election cycle. North Dakotans legalized medical marijuana on the statewide ballot. That policy is still in the process of being implemented, but in the interim, there's a ballot measure out there being circulated, and judging by the way they're collecting signatures for it, the pace at which they're doing it, they are going to be putting that ballot measure on the ballot as well. So North Dakota is going to have a chance to say whether or not we want recreational marijuana in the state of North Dakota. Should it be legal? Well, some folks from North Dakota State University, they're members of what is a national group. It's a local chapter, NDSU chapter of a national group called Students for Sensible Drug Policy, are going to be holding a forum about the issue tomorrow. Here to talk with me about it are Bradley Foster. Brad, how's it going?
Hey, it's going really great, Rob. How are you doing today?
Pretty good. And then also Jox Harvey, and I'm sorry. I'm trying to filter this
You're
name
good,
through
man.
My... Yeah, how do you pronounce your last name, dude?
You pronounce my name Jox Harvey.
Jox Harvey. All right, Jox. Thanks for your time as well, and I'm sorry for butchering your name. I'm not good for pronunciation.
you're all right.
All right. Well, Jack, tell us about your event tomorrow. What's going on?
Well, ultimately, this is the culmination of 100 plus hours of me and Bradley working together here to just provide a marijuana forum that is necessarily a debate and providing information on recreational marijuana for the state of North Dakota. And obviously we want to keep as much bias out of this as possible. So we are providing political speakers from every major political party here in the state. We have a representative from the Republican Party, a representative from the Democrat Party, and we have a representative from the Libertarian Party. And then we have Dave Owen from Legalize ND, who actually wrote the bill that will be presented to legislation. And then we have Bruce Quick and Mark Fries from Vogel Law Firm coming in to speak, who are also a couple of professors at NDSU who teach constitutional law and judicial process.
I know Mark well. He's a frequent guest on this program, so it sounds like a great event. What motivated you guys to want to have this event? I mean, what issue did you see out there that made you think, you know what, holding this event would be beneficial to the public?
I guess for me it was really the fact that we're having such a monumental change coming to the state of North Dakota, and we're really the first, you know, typically red state to consider an initiative like legalizing marijuana. And we wanted to give the entire North Dakota, Fargo-Moorhead community a chance to come together and have a discussion on it like adults so that we can really work through this complex social issue and kind of weigh the pros and cons of changing the law.
Now, Brad, I noticed that the name of this is the pre-420 pot party. To me, one of the arguments for legalizing recreational marijuana, I don't have a lot of interest in using it myself. I have tried it. I tried it back in high school. Didn't particularly enjoy it that much. Haven't really been that interested in it since. But I don't really have a problem with people who want to use it. And to me, one of the arguments for it is I'm not sure that marijuana prohibition is accomplishing much as is. Now, when I see the name of your event, the pre-420 pot party, I don't know. That seems to me a tacit admission that there's a lot of pot smoking going on around NDSU as it is. Is that fair to say?
Well, I mean, for starters, we, you know, one of the things that we focus on with Students for Sensible Drug Policy is, you know, Nancy Reagan had her program back in the day called Just Say No.
I remember it.
We have a program called Just Say No that focuses on harm reduction. So we really want to be honest with the fact that people in our age group, people in our geographic area in a city like this are going to be using drugs, whether we tell them to or not. And then furthermore, we just really like the way it sounds. Rolls off the tongue, you know.
All right. Well, Jox, do you think, I mean, if we legalize marijuana in North Dakota, first of all, I mean, I'm assuming both of you guys, because you're part of Students for Sensible Drug Policy, I'm assuming you're both in favor of legalization on a personal level?
Yes,
absolutely.
Yeah. Jacques, what do you think would happen if we legalized marijuana in North Dakota, recreational marijuana?
First thing that's going to have to happen is obviously we're going to have to organize a tax structure to deal with that. We already have the Compassionate Care Act that has compassionate care centers that are dealt with within the first bill for medical marijuana. So essentially what has been going on when states have been going on and legalizing at this point is a lot of times they mimic one state. And a lot with our last bill, it mimicked Colorado a lot. So essentially what would be happening with this bill is if it were to be legalized, we would just take that next step and use the compassionate care centers for utilizing recreational marijuana as well. So basically people who are using it for a medical purpose would get either a tax break on it or a cheaper price. And then people who were using it for recreational reasons would pay a more of a full price and be able to carry less.
Yeah. A lot of that would be up to the legislature, right? I mean, when I look at the ballot measure that's being circulated to legalize recreational marijuana, that's really all it does. It just makes recreational marijuana legal, and then it expunges criminal records, you know, related to things that would be legal under this new ballot measure. I should caution, doesn't let anybody out of prison or anything like that. But that's really the two things. Really, on the most basic level, all it does is make recreational marijuana legal. The rest of it, how we tax it, how we regulate it, everything else is really would be up to the legislature. So if we legalize this, and here's one problem, and Bradley, maybe you can speak to this. I look at the medical marijuana measure. To me, it was always too complex. It was too bureaucratic. You look across the border in Minnesota, where they've had legalized medical marijuana for a long time. It is so bureaucratic. It is so expensive as a result of that bureaucracy that a lot of people are still turning to the black market to get their pot because getting it through legal channels is too expensive. To me, that's a big argument for legalizing recreational marijuana. If for nothing else, the people who want it for medical reasons, it's just going to be easier for them to get it legally.
Well, in general with that, though, too, you have to understand that Minnesota's medical marijuana is not psychoactive, and it's you more or less get it through a provider, and they've regulated who can grow it and everything else. So essentially, yeah, you would have to get it through the black market if you wanted to psychoactively use it for medical reasons.
Yeah, one of the other big things that we're going to have to, I guess, just face facts with in this state is, like you said, we know that it's being brought in from other states where it's legal. We know that people are transporting it across North Dakota. We know that people are bringing it here. So instead of wasting all these officers' time and money searching cars because they smell a little weed or giving someone a jail sentence because they have a couple grams of pot in the back of their car, let's bring that money into the open. Let's bring it into the banking system. Let's tax it. Let's regulate it. And let's turn that black market money into what they would call white market money, and let's make it work for the state of North Dakota.
You know, there was a really interesting statistic in North Dakota. And by the way, 701-293-9000 if you want to join the program, 888-970-9329, email talk at WDAY.com. There was a really interesting statistic recently where from our Department of Corrections, and it was something like I don't want to say two out of three or three out of four, and I don't have the numbers right in front of me, but some ridiculous number of drug arrests in North Dakota were related to pot. To me, that seems like a tremendous waste of resources when we see the inmate populations in our state going up, the costs associated with incarcerating all those people going up in our state. It just seems like we're arresting a lot of people for marijuana. Now, to be fair, not all of those arrests, just because an arrest is related to pot doesn't mean that there aren't other reasons mixed in there that person should be arrested because they committed crimes. But right. We're arresting a lot of people just because of pot, because they have pot, they're distributing pot, they're growing pot, they're smoking pot. This seems to me like a tremendous waste of time.
Yeah, Bradley and I were actually just talking about that. What was it, Bradley, when the last year they recorded 52% of the majority mm-hmm. arrests were of low-level offenders who were just in possession of marijuana. And along the incarceration thing, too, it costs North Dakota a little over $34,000 a year just to incarcerate a single individual. So and when we're speaking of low-level offenders, of course, you know, legalization is going to help that immensely and be able to channel those funds somewhere else, and especially police work and time to be working on other issues within North Dakota.
And, you know, one other thing that I think is critical that no one brings up is that when these people are arrested, when they're, you know, taken to jail, held overnight, when they have to post bail. I mean, if you're someone that's really living on the margins, like a lot of North Dakotans are, you know, agriculture and oil aren't what they used to be, then maybe getting a day or two off is more than your employer can handle. You know, we have people that are losing their jobs because effectively they had a little of a plant in their possession. I think that's wrong. That's really not good for the economy of North Dakota.
I don't think it's good for our society in general. And also, I mean, there's something to be said. I know a lot of people argue, they make sort of a rule of law argument here, or a law and order argument, and they make it, well, if we legalize this, then it's just going to be stoners running wild across the state, cats and dogs living together, you know, a lot of weird stuff's going to happen. That's sort of their argument. But I think there's a law and order argument to be made. What do you say about a law that a lot of people don't have respect for?
Yeah,
right.
You know,
I mean, there's a saying. My dad served in the military. He was in the Army, and he said, you know, there's a saying in the military that you don't ever issue an order that you know is not going to be obeyed. And I don't think we should have laws on the books that people aren't inclined to follow. And you know, one of them is the marijuana. Now, I realize laws get, we have laws against murder, and people still murder each other, and that doesn't. I don't want to get rid of the laws against murder anytime soon. But on this level, it just seems to me like there's just we're breeding contempt for the law by making something illegal that I think most North Dakotans, I think you look at the medical marijuana measure, I think most North Dakotans think that the prohibitionist attitude towards marijuana is archaic and out of date, if it ever made sense.
Yeah, they did a study on Colorado after they just got done legalizing, and the amount of teen users and the amount of users in general pretty much stayed the same. Legalizing marijuana isn't going to have that effect. Like I said, it's for harm reduction and for the safety of the state and more or less economic need that it would be better for us to do so, because in terms of harm reduction, like if we can take this out of the darkness and into the light, it's going to help people way more, especially if it's not going to change the amount of users.
And, you know, one of the things that I think that we have to deal with it also is coming up in our society is there's a lot of, and it's in the national media all over the place, there's a lot of distrust between elements in society and the police. And I think one of the big things that we can do to come together so that we're, you know, back on the same page, so to speak, is that we need to make the laws, like you said, respectable. I think it was Frederick Bastiat that said that the easiest way to make someone respect the law is to make it respectable. And I think that a lot of people all over the country, and especially in North Dakota, are looking at, you know, giving kids criminal records or giving someone a fine or community service or whatever for doing something that didn't impact anyone. It just doesn't make sense.
701-293-9000, 888-970-9329, email talk at wday.com. Now, we actually started off because I think what people are hearing is the three of us saying the current marijuana prohibition doesn't make any sense. If we got rid of it, things would be a lot better. But what I really liked is when we first started talking about this, we started the segment, you guys mentioned that you acknowledged that there are harms along with this, right? I mean, you can abuse marijuana. There are people who use this drug irresponsibly. I liked that you acknowledged that because it's a real thing and it shouldn't just be swept aside. Pot does have some deleterious effects on society, like any drug, like alcohol, like a lot of other things. I think what your argument is, though, let's deal with those things head on. Let's make it legal and then deal with those problems rather than having prohibition and pretending like that's stopping anybody from getting pot. Because I'm pretty sure in even the smallest community in North Dakota, you probably find somebody who'll sell you some pot. It's everywhere.
Yeah, that's a really good point. The link that I always try and draw is back to alcohol prohibition in the 1920s. You know, Americans didn't stop drinking alcohol because it was illegal. They just took a whole lot of other risks because it was illegal and made really society as a whole more dangerous, not only for people that drank marijuana, but also for people that were caught up in the violence of alcohol prohibition. So I think that one of the things that we need to realize is, yes, obviously marijuana has impacts on the adolescent brain. Yes, if you use it every day, you're probably going to see some problems. But you can buy a pack of cigarettes in any gas station in this state, damn near, and it says right on the box, this will give you lung cancer. You can walk into any liquor store and buy a handle of whatever kind of cheap booze you want and drink yourself to the point where you need to go to the hospital. Even assuming that the prohibition argument is in favor of public health, it clearly does not meet those standards.
Well, gentlemen, tell me about your event tomorrow. What are the specifics? People who are interested in showing up, listening, participating, where do they get info?
All right. So if you want any more info on the event for tomorrow, you can take a look at our Facebook page, which is Students for Sensible Drug Policy at NDSU. The event itself will be from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. at the Festival Concert Hall. It is free. Please do not bring any weed or any substances, though, and plan on smoking those there. That will not help anybody. So we will start out with the political speakers. We'll have a segment from them, and then we will go to Dave Owen. And then after that, we will have Mark Fries and Bruce Quick speak, and then we will have a 30-minute Q&A after all of that.
Well, it sounds like a good time. It sounds like it'll be very informative. And again, what time is that tomorrow?
That is from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. at the Festival Concert Hall at North Dakota State University.
Doors open at 5.
All right, we have a caller on the line. Roger, want to seek him in real quick. Go ahead, Roger, what's up?
I just have a question as far as, you know, as an employer, worker safety is a big issue. So now I have employees that have been using drugs of some sort, and I'm supposed to maintain a safe workplace for all my other employees. I don't know the effects of how long pot stays in the system or, you know, what's safe. So how do you go about controlling that, you know?
I'll jump in on that real quick.
Sure, go ahead.
In general, like I said, the legalization is not going to change the amount of users. So if you have workers or employees that are smoking already. They're not just going to all of a sudden start smoking because it's legal. And even though we're for legalization, we still believe within private business rights. Like, if you have to drug test your employees in order to provide a safe work environment for yourselves, then by all means do that.
I think also we're going to have to see a change in maybe how we're doing some of the testing, because one of the challenges with marijuana in terms of workplace safety, the goal is you don't want your employees to be inebriated. And I think with alcohol, that's very easy. You're either drunk or you're not, right? And it's relatively easy to measure that with things like blood alcohol content. You can measure inebriation. I think it's harder with marijuana because you can have traces that you've used marijuana in your system without necessarily being inebriated in the moment. So I don't know. We may have to see some changes in testing to recognize the fact that this drug is increasingly becoming legal to use, but because you used it 2 days ago doesn't necessarily mean, you know, if you smoked some Friday night, that doesn't necessarily mean you're inebriated on the job Monday morning, even though it's still detectable, if right. that makes sense. So I think totally we're going to have some changes. Roger, thank you for the call. Appreciate it. Gentlemen, thank you for your time. More information about the event, Students for Sensible Drug Policy. You can find them on Facebook. All the event information is there. That's happening tomorrow at NDSU. This is the Rob Report, 970 WDY AM, 93.1 FM. We'll be right back. Don't go away. Welcome back, Rapport 970 WDY AM 93.1 FM 701-293-9000 888-970-9329 email talk at WDAY.com. I'm really glad they're putting on this event at NDSU, Nateel. And I'm really happy with the direction that the debate over marijuana policy seems to be heading in, which is towards I think very rational, very pragmatic considerations. I think in the past a lot of it was based sort of just on hysteria and fear tactics. And I think now is, you know, smoking marijuana's a normal thing. I mean it's not unlike cracking open a beer at the end of the day.
Or having a cigarette.
Right. So, you know, I'm not saying it's healthy, but it's a vice and a lot of people enjoy it. Our prohibition on it, I don't think, is accomplishing much in terms of bettering our society. As a matter of fact, I think in a lot of ways the opposite is true. So how do we legalize it? And, you know, even Roger's concerns are perfectly valid. You know, he's, as an employer, he's concerned, what do I do if I have employees who are smoking marijuana? He doesn't want to get sued. He doesn't want to see somebody get hurt. He doesn't want to be liable. He doesn't want to see his business go under because somebody made a stupid decision with marijuana on the job. And that's understandable, you know, and those are problems that we could talk about and we could find solutions to.
They are actually already finding some solutions to these right. problems. A while ago, you and I talked about how with marijuana becoming legal in more states, we were going to start seeing more and more effort be put into finding the marijuana equivalent of a breathalyzer.
Right.
Jay recently had in the guys from Legalize ND, and they were talking about a test that's being developed, I think, in Michigan that is essentially a breathalyzer yes-no equivalent of whether or not you've smoked marijuana. And yeah. that's easy peasy. It's a new thing that can be placed on top of your sobriety testing, your field sobriety testing.
Yeah.
So it's happening, and it's going to get easier because the reason that this technology doesn't exist is because there hasn't been need for it before.
Right. And so I don't know. I, for one, am just completely enthused. I mean, I'm just happy that we're finally having a good debate about this. And I just feel like we're finally getting to a point where, you know, we could talk about this without the hysteria, without some of the fear. And just say, this is something that's going to happen. This is a change that's going to happen in our society. And these sort of changes don't happen very often. They really don't. So it's a good thing. I'm glad it's happening. More to come straight ahead. Kent Busick, did you get your taxes in? Are you having trouble filing your taxes today? We'll talk with Kent Busick. He's a CPA, also a sit-in for me, a guest host. We'll be right back after this. Don't go away. Let me go on, like I glister in the sun. Let me go.
Work shifts and safety belts. Bucket seats have all got to go when we're driving. In the car, it makes my baby seem so far.
Welcome back. We're on Port 970 WDY AM 93.1 FM. Happy to be with you. Well, it's tax day, Nateel. We've been talking about it, and there's been some filing difficulties.
It's tax day for all you fools who didn't file in January.
Some of us filed not right at the last minute. I don't know. I don't know if it's a phobia, if it's like a medical condition. I can't file my taxes before April. I try. I'll line up all the paperwork on my desk, and I'll just look at it and say, ugh. It's not time yet. Is there a lot of that going around? Kent Busick is my guest. He is with Busick, Olson & Associates. He also runs a business called Taxman. If you need taxes done, Kent's the sort of guy you want to talk to. Kent, are there a lot of people like me that are just chronic procrastinators?
Good afternoon, Rob. Thanks for having me on. To tell you the truth, I'd say about a third of my clientele gets their tax returns filed in the last 2 weeks.
About a third?
Yeah, and then I extend maybe 10 to 15% as well. So I probably get right around half done.
Wow, that's pretty amazing. Now, today the IRS has been having some difficulties. I mean, as a practical matter for tax filers, what does that mean? Do you have any advice for people who might be running into that problem today?
Well, my understanding is they're having some website problems or some e-filing or e-payment issues. So basically document anything and everything. So if you should happen to try and file and the web page comes up that the server is down or not accepted, print it off, and then you have documentation that you at least tried. So that way, if they should come back and send you a penalty for late filing or late payment, you can respond and ask for an abatement and say, hey, I tried. This was your fault, not mine. So just document everything.
Just document it. If you're running into problems, document it, but then keep trying.
I would, or like I said, just wait till tomorrow. Or the other option is if you're trying to make payments, my understanding is they were having problems making electronic payments. If that's not working, just go to the post office and mail your payment in. So you'll have documentation that way.
What about if it's because today's tax day, it's the deadline. What about people who are sitting there looking at their tax situation, saying I am not going to get this done today? What do they do?
Well, they file an extension. There's two things out there that you need to do. One is pay and file. And those are two different things for all practical purposes with the IRS. So at the very least, what we tell you to do is file, whether you actually file the return or file an extension. By filing the extension, that gives you an additional 6 months to file the return, and then you are not subject to late filing penalties. So that's one set of issues off the books for you. If you can't pay, that's a different set of issues. But first and foremost, file an extension or file the return, whether you can make the payment or not.
Yeah, because I was going to ask that question. I had to pay in this year. I usually try to do my withholding where I try to balance it out, and I guess I didn't. Maybe I can ask you that question, too, here in a minute. But for those people who are worried, saying also, well, I want to file my taxes, and I'm ready to file my taxes, but I don't have the money in the bank account right now to write that check. What does that look like? I mean, is what you owe, is it due immediately? Can you set up payments throughout the year?
Well, that's the other thing is if you're not able to pay, if you file the return and you have a payment due, the IRS will send you a letter in 45 to 60 days asking for payment or do you want a payment plan? And they'll work with you in setting up that payment plan.
Okay, so it's not
again,
like you have to
case,
have
you file the return versus filing the extension. So and again, like the penalty is actually for late payment. Excuse me, late filing are more so than late payment. So that's why, at the very least, file the extension, file the return, then you eliminate at least one side of the penalties. And then anything that you owe the IRS, they call it a penalty, but they just charge you about 6% interest.
How do you, I mean, if you're in a situation, is there, I mean, because what you just described, if you file and you know you got a balance due to the IRS, is it necessarily late if you don't pay that immediately? Or do you have to, or can you wait till you get that letter 30, 45 days later?
Well, no, it's again two different things. The payment is late, and you'll get charged interest for that. Whereas, but you're not late filing the return.
Okay.
Two different things.
But you are late with your payment if you don't pay it immediately when you file.
Right, and then they charge you interest. And again, to me, it's a reasonable amount of interest. It's not like they're charging 15, 18% interest. I believe it's about 6% right now.
Okay. What about people who are, like I did, I got to the end of the year and I found out, oh, shoot, I got to pay in. Now, I don't necessarily like getting back a big return either. I'd rather just get my money and do my things with my money and not have the government hold it for me interest-free. How do I, for someone like me who got to the end of the year and I ended up having to pay in, what's your advice for setting it up so that maybe that won't be the case in the next year? I mean, obviously, you're withholdings, but... I mean, is it something that can they bring it to someone like you? I mean, what does that process look like?
Well, what I really try to tell people is make it a year-round process, not only with your tax person, but with your financial advisor and your insurance person, because all three of them will do different things for you. So, you know, 1st of June, pull your tax return back out and go talk to somebody about it and set up a plan for it. So if you owed a few $1,000, obviously, you can either change your withholding or change your 401k to have more non-taxable dollars, maybe look at more charitable contributions, any number of things that you could do. But basically what I tell is just have a plan and work on it throughout the year and maybe check more than once because obviously with what your tax answer was for 2017 and knowing your situation with a couple children, Rob, it's completely different next year with the new tax act. So the fact that you owed money this year, you may get a refund because of the change in the standard deduction and the child tax credit under the new Trump tax bill. So you may not have to do anything.
So that's something you would recommend, though, because obviously we do have big, and I want to ask you about the impact that you've seen on this tax law so far. And by the way, if people want to call in, if you have comments or questions, 701-293-9000, 888-970-9329, email talk at WDAY.com. So your recommendation, because obviously, because we have changes in the policy that are going to be new for 2018, your recommendation is around June, you say, go and maybe sit down with someone like yourself?
For my clients, I mean, we have a projection for them already. So okay. When you pick up your return this year, I've got a projection what the return will look like with the new tax act if everything stays the same. But again, what I recommend for my people is, you know, come in during the off season when we're not busy and let's sit down and go through some things because, you know, we might not be able to spend enough time on a person's return or a person's situation. You know, I mean, we had 150 people through the office yesterday. You know, you say hello, goodbye, and they're out the door. You know, come back in when it's slower, when it's calmer, and sit down and work out a tax plan because it might not just be taxes that could be impacted. You know, you could refinance your house, your life insurance needs, business or personal insurance needs. So there's a lot more to it than just the whole tax side. But again, sit down and talk to somebody if you're not familiar with what's going on.
Now, the tax laws, and obviously there's a lot of political discussion about this, and I'm sure you don't want to wade into that too much. But just as a practical matter, what impact did last year's tax reforms have on filers this year that you saw?
Well, for this year, it's very little because most of the changes were for beginning January 1, 2018. So the impact is going to be next year. And like I indicated, we're able to run a projection off our software to tell you what the impact of the tax act was. And I think most people were pleasantly surprised. I think they listened to the CNNs of the world or the MSNBCs too much, saying this was a bad deal. But, you know, for the most part, you know, I would say 85, 90% of my clientele is going to see a benefit of the tax law change going forward. And whether that's because of the increase in the standard deduction, lowering of rates, change in the child tax credit, there's a number of things that were very beneficial out there. And from Ryan Rauschenberger, the state tax commissioner, you know, he indicated about 75 to 80% of the people in North Dakota would be able to file the short form for federal purposes. So the complexity then goes down because they won't have to itemize anymore. They'll be able to take the new standard deduction. So, you know, I view it as a lot of positives. I would just soon have the business paying less taxes. You know, take the Gate Cities of the world here in Fargo, Gate City Savings Bank. The new tax law came out. They immediately passed along raises, did some other free promotions for their customers. They passed the savings along to the people here in the town. So,
yeah. Well, it sounds like it's pretty good overall. And as you said, next year might be the time when a lot of people are seeing it. Of course, I bet you Republicans are probably hoping it might have shown up a little bit more this year. But so it goes. You don't always get what you want. Ken, any other final advice? And again, it's tax day and people are down at the deadline. Any other common trip-ups people who are under the gun make at this point?
Well, you know, my biggest advice right now, I mean, if your return isn't done today or, you know, you haven't had a chance to review it or look at it, just extend. I mean, that's the simplest thing. But a lot of people get concerned, too, just, you know, kind of an urban legend that, well, if I extend, there's going to be a higher risk for audit or there's going to be more scrutiny. You know, I don't think that's the case at all. I mean, the IRS has their rationale how they choose audit clients. So with that being said, you know, if you have to extend, no big deal. I would say, you know, nationwide, about a third of the people do. So just make sure you file something today.
All right. So whether it's an extension or whether it's your actual return, just get something filed today, then it's done. How hard is it to file a return? I mean, what's that process like?
Well, an extension?
Not a return. I mean an extension.
Yeah, just basically you have to fill out the form 4868 and send it into the service, and you can do that electronically as well.
Huh. Well, who knew it was that easy? And easy and taxes are not two things we usually say in the same sentence.
That's correct.
Kent, thanks for your time. Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you, Rob.
It's Kent Busick. Busick, Olson & Associates, also runs a business called Tax Man. He's sort of person you want to talk to if you've got tax questions. This is the Rob Report. We'll wrap things up right after this. Don't go away. Never knew where we could go. Jay Thomas Show, straight ahead. You're going to want to stay tuned for that, as always. This is the, it's the bitter end of the Rob Report.
Why is it so bitter?
I guess it's not
you
that
You don't
bitter.
Have to go file your taxes.
That's true. I'm done.
You're fine.
I think it's funny. I want to think of myself as being a responsible person. I did it 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, I believe.
I was surprised.
Out of everyone here, I am the most responsible.
Yeah.
When it comes to my taxes.
I can't believe what Kent said. Like 50%, like he said half of his customers are either filing an extension or doing it like in the last couple days.
And you wonder why the site is down today.
Weird. Kent Busick from Busick Olson & Associates is a CPA, sort of guy you want to talk. These people are more helpful than I think. I think a lot of people are afraid to talk to people like Kent. And you shouldn't be. They're more helpful than you think. 701-293-9000, we want to join in, 888-970-9329, email talk@wday.com. Let's see, tomorrow we are not going to have Congressman Kramer. We've been a little hit and miss with his town halls lately on Congressman Kramer coming on the program, but I guess he's not going to be able to make it tomorrow. He's a busy guy these days, but hopefully the next week. Other than that, I don't know what we're doing yet tomorrow. I'll figure it out, I guess, this afternoon. And Nateel, you only have a few days left with us.
Yes, I have 3 days left, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And then I'm
the plants.
Packing up and shipping out.
Man, it's just not going to be the same.
I know. Somebody has got to keep you in line. They got to find somebody who can keep you in line.
Otherwise, you know what'll happen? I'll go off the rails on something. I'll go down some rabbit hole and then nobody will bring me back.
They're going to turn into the next, what's his name? The conspiracy theorist radio
Art Bell?
Guy. Yeah,
I'm not that bad.
You're going to be.
I'm not
going to
be talking about like hollow earth theories and whatnot. I'm not a conspiracy guy. Just kind of a dorky guy.
As long as I don't come back to Fargo and find out you're, you know, the new Sean Hannity or something, I'll be okay.
I will never be Sean Hannity. I'm not a bootlicker. I'm just not. I think that's there's a lot of people. I think in this line of work who are like that, who are just absolutely loyal to a party or to a politician. And I can tell you could go pretty far being that, but I am not that. Some people who do this in this state are. I am not. Jay Thomas Show, straight ahead. You can always catch me here 12 to 2 p.m. Monday through Friday on 970 WDOI AM 93.1 FM. Or, of course, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at sayanythingblog.com, North Dakota's most popular political blog. Thanks for listening. We'll talk again. Woo, I can lose your mind. Now I
get my